This is Soldiers of Christ and Visitors. We changed our Sunday night services for about 8 months of the year, and so tonight will be different from a regular Sunday night, and then next Sunday night is going to be different from this Sunday night. We're trying to give it some variety and everything, but it's already obvious that what we're talking about, what we're doing tonight, is very much very similar to what we did last Sunday night. That is, got to study the book of Joshua. And so if you have lost your card, and please do not lose these, but if you are not here and you don't have one of these green cards, go ahead and raise your hand right now. Let's get these out so everybody can have copies of them so they'll know what we're trying to do. Just for the matter of information, this is the prophet card. It's level one of the study of the book of Joshua, and really this one is the beginning of Joshua and goes through. I guess it goes all the way through the life of Solomon. I'm not sure exactly how far it goes, but it goes through Solomon, and so it's not a very, very difficult card. And let me tell you, because there aren't nearly as many questions, it will help you to go up to that next level. And the next level is the king level, and then prophet, priest, then the priest level. I guess king is the third level. And I think almost every one of us, unlike the one in Genesis through Deuteronomy, it's so difficult to get all the way up. I really believe if you'll put forth a little bit of effort, you'll be able to get it. Let's get to the book of Joshua. It's teaching night, and that's what it's all about. Joshua tells us about the conquering of the promised land. I guess you know that much about the book of Joshua. And so last week we discussed that and did all of those things in relationship to the book of Joshua about how he took Moses' place and how I think we probably mentioned the Lord told him to take off his sandal off of his foot because he was standing on holy ground. And he was there in the presence of God. We talked about the taking of Jericho, and I hope you know the number of times they walked around the city of Jericho. The answer is 13, in case you do not. Well, what happens after that? Because tonight we're going to cover, last week we covered about 7 chapters of the book of Joshua. Tonight we're going to cover the final 17 chapters of the book of Joshua. So let's fasten our seatbelts and let's learn the book of Joshua. They're in the promised land. They crossed over the Jordan River. Remember how the Jordan River opened up, but not unlike the Red Sea, it really just started piling up on one side and the rest of it just flowed the rest of the way. They came over to the promised land. The manna stopped. Then they take the city of Jericho. And it's interesting, all of the details that are involved in that teaches us a lot really about the nature of obedience. You know what would have happened, do you not, if they hadn't lined up the order that God gave to them? They hadn't marched around the city and they just thought, well, it's, you know, 13's an unlucky number, and so to be politically correct, let's do it 12 and then let's shout. Nothing would have happened because they've been disobedient to God. Great, great lessons to learn from the book of Joshua. Folks, we're not trying to learn facts. Trying to build faith and trying to change our hearts and change our lives. And so it's not just a matter of sort of reading the Bible through every year. It's letting the Word of God get in our hearts and change our hearts and our soul. Well, they go into the promised land and there is that first battle, and it's the only battle that they lose going into the promised land. Now, you probably know the names of this battle. I'll tell you my remembrance of the name of where this happened was. I was at Athens Bible School. I went from there from the grade 6 through 10, and then the last 2 years over at Madison County Bible School in Huntsville. And I remember us having like a spelling bee, a quiz that was being given. And they asked, what was the name of the city? No, you had to spell the name of the city that they were not able to take. Do you know the names of that? And if I were to ask you to spell it, you would miss it like every one of us, except one little smart aleck girl who spelled it just right. The rest of us in this spelling bee spelled it A-I, you know. And I was arrogantly confident, so when they said, Dan, what would spell the name of the city that they could not capture? And I said, A-I. Sit down, Jenkins, you know you're wrong. You're a smart aleck girl, capital A-I. I'm telling you, I hate teachers for that reason, okay? And, I'm telling you, anybody that is that meticulous about saying it that way. I will never forget the name of this. You know the story, do you not? You remember whenever they took the city of Jericho, they were told not to take any of the treasures out of that city, for the treasures belonged to God. And the reason for the defeat whenever they got ready to capture Ai was that there was a man in that camp, and do you remember his name? You know, whenever they stoned him, if this might help you, when they stoned him, he was really aching, okay? And so he was also aching before they stoned him, but that might help you remember the name of that man that was there. Because Achan, when the city of Jericho was taken, they were told all of the gold and the silver and the possessions that's in that city belongs to God. But Achan described his own actions. And I don't know if you remember things in a twisted way or not. That's the way I remember. I remember misspelling Ai. I remember the man was, his name was Achan because he was aching. I understand that. And Achan had eye problems. He had four eyes, if that'll help you. And because here's the way he described, he says, I saw, I coveted, I took, and I hid. I don't know if that'll help you remember the four things that he did, but here's the lust of the eyes and the lust of the, he sees all of that that's there. And so he says, I saw it was gold and silver and a garment from Babylon. They've been 40 years in the wilderness and their clothes have not worn out. Their shoes have not worn out. They've got 40-year-old Egyptian clothing. I have no idea on earth where that man thought he was going to wear that garment from Babylon. I find that absolutely amazing. It's like a woman going and buying a dress two sizes too small and knowing she'll never wear it, never have a chance to wear it because she won't admit she's, you know, gained weight or anything like that. But here, he's got this garment from Babylon. And what's he going to do with it? Well, it's interesting as you read the text. And listen to this. The Bible says not that Achan sinned, but Israel sinned. Isn't that amazing? What does that say about the church when the church does not deal with sin in the church? What does that say about this attitude? Well, you know, you can be a member of the Church of Christ and live any way you want to and do anything that you want to do it. The Bible says the nation sinned. And that's just in passing to learn that. But can you, without looking at the screen, can you look down and think about the four eyes that he said? I saw it, I coveted it, I took it, and I hid it. And he hid it in his tent. Now, you remember, you may not recall, they had first sent 3,000 men up to take the city of Ai. There were only 12,000 people, men and women, who lived in the city of Ai. And so they thought if they just sent 3,000 men up there, they'd be able to take the city. They were defeated in the taking of that city. And so when Joshua fell down and before God and was praying, God said, the reason you've lost is because there's sin in the camp. So at the instructions of God, Joshua causes all of the people to pass before him. And God pointed out that Achan, I believe, was of the tribe of Judah, of this family, and then even of Achan's great-grandfather. And finally, they just kept narrowing it down, until Achan said, well, I hid those garments in my tent. I hid that garment, the gold and the silver. It's there in my tent. You know what they did to him? Not really a big deal. He'd confess what he had done. There are consequences to sin. And so they took him, they took his family, they took his children, they took his oxen, they took his cattle, they even took his tent. And they burned them. Well, first of all, they stoned him and his family. And they piled all of this together and burned all of his possessions. There's a seriousness about sin that we need to really be aware of. And whenever sin is present, when your children or your grandchildren do things that are cute but evil, you'd better react in a very, very strong way so they'll understand the seriousness of what they've done. Too much time on that. And so how do you take the city of Ai? Well, Joshua has a strategy as to how to do that. And so here's his strategy. He sends out first, I think it's some 12,000 men, and they go hide on the backside away from the city. And then Joshua takes another 5,000, puts them over on the west side of the city. Joshua prepares everybody for the capture of Ai. And finally, Joshua and the main armies headed toward the city. They rush up to the city. The men of Ai come out. Joshua retreats. The people think we're winning again. The people of the city of Ai think we're winning. They leave the city. And when they leave the city, the 12,000 troops that are hidden behind the city come inside the city, set the city on fire. And now the people in the city of Ai are caught between two armies. And the Bible talks about how 12,000 of them are taken. Joshua holds out his spear. And as long as he holds out his spear, they attack and attack and attack and attack. They go inside the city and they destroy the city. Interesting story in and of itself. Now they're in the promised land. They've taken Jericho. They've taken Ai. They've got this great reputation. And so Joshua gets the people of God together and reads to them the laws of God. There's something that needs to be said, and there's value to be had in reading the Word of God. The Bible even mentions the fact that they were there and the children were there as they were listening to the reading of the commandments of God. They then go to a place in that land where there are two mountains. One is Mount Ebal, the other is Mount Gerizim. And at that place, Joshua begins to read to them. What does he read to them? All of the words of the law, read by Joshua at Mount Gerizim and at Mount Ebal, all of the words of the law. They were divided into two groups, and they heard the reading of the words of God. Well, there were some kings that had heard about Joshua. And these were kings right around the city of Ai and Jericho, right in sort of the central part of the promised land. And so five kings form an alliance, and they plan to destroy and defeat Joshua. We've got to get these Jews out of this land. This is our land. Well, right between where those people are and where the camp of Israel is are the people of the city of Gibeon. It's an interesting story about what the Gibeonites do. They decide they're going to work a deception on the Jews. And while they're just a very, very few miles away, the men of the city of Gibeon come to Joshua and to the Jews. And they tell Joshua of the long journey that they've had to make. In fact, there's evidence of him. They wear old garments and they bring old wine bottles. And they hold up the bread that was fresh bread. They said, we took it just out of the oven before we've left. And we've traveled all of this distance, and we know that God, that we want to have an alliance with you. And so Joshua, because of the goodness of the heart, and the Bible said because he did not inquire of the Lord in relationship to that. What a lesson there about us making our decisions and first consulting, what does God want me to do about this? Sometimes we have a decision to make and we never even think about what's the right thing to do about it. Let me tell you something. There's one rule in life, and that is do right. And another way of saying that, it's always right to do right, and it's always wrong to do wrong. Never right to do wrong, never wrong to do right. And that's right because the Bible is right. They made a decision without ever even consulting God. The folks are just a few miles away. And so they make an alliance with Joshua, and Joshua makes peace with the Gibeonites. And then, shortly after that, Joshua learns of the deception. And so the punishment of the Gibeonites was that they were to be the woodcutters for the Jews. And they were to be those who brought the waters to them, those who went to where the wells were and brought water to them. They became actually sort of servants of the Jews. Well, you've got the people over in Gibeon. And so these kings and this alliance said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to attack the Gibeonites. They were turncoats and they tried to make peace with the Jews. And we don't want anybody around here making peace with the Jews. So those kings came and attacked the people of the Gibeonites, of Gibeon, the Gibeonites. And Joshua comes to the rescue. Once you give your word, you got to keep your word. What a great lesson about when in there was a time in American history where there were million-dollar deals made on the basis of a handshake. And Joshua and the people said, hey, we made this alliance, and so we've got to keep. And they go over and they protect them, and they defeat those kings. And in the battle with these kings, there's an interesting event that happened. And that is, Joshua prayed that the sun might stay still. What was it that enabled Joshua to defeat Gibeon when they were being attacked by the nations, by those kings that were attacking Gibeon? The sun stood still for almost an entire day. Can you imagine that? And thus, by doing this, the fear of God was placed, obviously, in the nations that were there in the land. They were already fearful of them. Remember what Rahab said? Remember what the people of the city of Gibeon had said? And now they have 2 days in a row where there's no night. The sun stands still. Unless somebody say, oh, the Bible's not scientifically correct. You know, the sun didn't really stand still. The earth started rotating. You need to understand that we talk about a sunrise and a sunset in our modern day and of speaking. It's not a contradiction. It's just a way of expressing something. What happened? Sun's up there and the sun stopped in the sky. The sun stood still just as much as the sun rises and the sun sets in relationship to that. Well, having taken that center part of the promised land, he goes down and takes that southern area down there where where Beersheba would be and where Kadesh Barnea would be, and even goes down as far as the land of Goshen, believe it or not. They go over to the borders of the land of Goshen, gets you all the way back down to the land of Egypt. They then turn north and conquer the northern part of the promised land. And so the territory was divided among the people. And so the question on the card is, what was the territory that they captured? And here's a great verse. Every bit of it that God said, all of the promised land was given. Let me tell you why that's important. The doctrine of premillennialism says that God never gave to the Jews all the land that He would promise He would give to them. And so in 1948, the Jewish nation was reestablished. And before Jesus comes back, the Jews have all got to go back to that promised land, because God did not keep His promises. And that's even why this question is here. And that is, the land captured by Joshua was all of the promised land. Now, we talked about him going south and going into hitting the middle area and going the north. You have any idea how many kings were conquered? You know, it's not just one nation. They have one king over it all. Each of those kings had their own kingdom. And so Joshua captured 31 kingdoms. That's a massive conquering of the land. And so there were all of those battles that were there, and some of the details are found in the book of Joshua. And then after Joshua had conquered all of this land, Joshua's task after taking the promised land, I mean, he goes in, he takes the promised land. What's Joshua's task after taking the promised land? Well, that was to divide the land by the tribes. God had told them how to do this, and so now they've taken the promised land, and the work that Joshua did after he had taken the land was to divide the land among the tribes. And so on the screen you have a depiction of the map that shows the location of some of the tribes. There was Joshua's companion that was there, and he's described as the man who wholly followed the Lord. And if I say Joshua, I suspect you'll know his name. We say the names almost like they're husband and wife. They're not. I mean, when somebody found out that Joshua and Caleb were not husband and wife, somebody made the remark one time, well, I thought they were husband and wife like Dan and Beersheba were. And Joshua and Caleb were not husband and wife. They were just companions. And they were the two faithful spies who went out and spied out the promised land. Caleb comes to Joshua when he's old, and he tells he makes a request of Joshua. He said, I'm now an old man. And he tells how old he was. And that's really one of the questions on the card. How old was Caleb after they took the promised land? He's 45. And so, pardon me, he's 85. And so for he was 40 whenever they took it, whenever he went in to spy out the land. He says, I was 40 and now I've been in that wilderness 40 years. And we've been 5 years trying to take this land. But you know that area down there where those giants were? Whenever we came back 45 years ago and we came back and said, the land is a land that flows with milk and honey. Honey, let's go and take the land. Oh, there are giants in the land, but let us go right now. Joshua says, or Caleb says to Joshua, give me that mountain where the giants are. And I love this story of this 85-year-old soldier of God. Faithful to God, and he was faithful when he was 40. And now at the end of his life, he says, I'm still going to be faithful. God said we could take that land. And so me and my family, we'll go down and we'll kill the giants. What a great lesson. And so Joshua takes that land. In the book of Joshua, you read about cities of refuge. They were on both sides of the Jordan River. And the question on the card is, what's the name, or not the name of the cities, but how many were there? Well, there were three on the west bank and three on the east bank. And look at the distribution of them. A city of refuge was a place where you could take refuge had you accidentally killed someone. It was not a protection where anybody that committed murder could run into a Catholic church building and ask for mercy. It was a place where an innocent man who had unintentionally killed another. Now his relatives, of the relatives of the dead man, had a right to demand his life, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But if you accidentally had done that, God made provision. And so the man who had accidentally slain another went to one of those cities of refuge, met with the elders of that city, and said, here's the details about what's happened. And he was given refuge inside that city. Once he couldn't go outside the city any great distance, and if he went outside that city any great distance, he could be killed. But he stayed in the city of refuge until the high priest died. And then he could go back to his home place again, and resume the normal life that he had had before. Well, here's a verse that is important to remember. And the location of it is where God gave Israel all the land that he promised. We believe this is an important verse if you know where it is. Obviously, it's near the end of the book of Joshua. It's in Joshua chapter 21, verse 43. It's on the card, but you need to memorize the location of it. We've tried to cut down on the number of locations and chapters to try to encourage every one of us to reach and to be students and to reach as many of these levels as we possibly can in relationship to this. It's in that same location, Joshua 21:45, that there is a memory verse that is there, and that is, not a word failed of any good thing which the Lord had spoken to the house of Israel, all came to pass. Joshua 21:43-45, that's a very, very important verse. Well, as an old man, when you get to the last chapter of the book of Joshua, there's a charge that's given to Joshua, and that charge is given early in his life, and it's repeated here at the end of his life whenever the charge had been given to Joshua. Joshua then gives this same charge to the people. And listen to this charge and then apply it to your life. Apply it to your life. God told Joshua to be courageous. Don't be afraid to stand up for what's right. And in the workplace, and in the school, and in your home, in relationship with parents who are trying to do wrong, in relationship to your children, in relationship to relatives, be courageous. Then he says, keep all of God's commandments and do not turn from the right to the right or to the left. You think about those terms, even in modern terms, of being conservative and liberal as we talk about the right and the left. It's interesting that same concept is found, the same words are found in the Bible that says, there is that which is right. And you've got to stay. And don't you get over here and bind something that God has not bound. There have been church in the history of the church in my lifetime, and in many of those older members can understand. Sometimes there are brethren who try to make laws God hasn't made, and they've been too conservative. And then the major problem that we're facing in the church today is a wave of liberalism that says you don't have to pay any attention to what God says. Be courageous. Keep His commandments. And don't deviate to the right or to the left. And the key phrase that was used by Joshua as he gets all of the people, you know this verse. You know the key phrase in Joshua's farewell speech to Israel was, choose you this day. Oh, pardon me. That's the memory verse. Pardon me. In this speech, he uses this phrase 9 times in 11 verses. Serve the Lord. Serve the Lord. You read 11 verses, and 9 times in 11 verses, serve the Lord. Serve the Lord. Serve the Lord. That's almost another way of saying do right. Serve the Lord, serve the Lord, serve the Lord. And it's this in this same chapter, Joshua 24, verse 15. Here's a memory verse, but you already know it. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Anybody, would you like to guess how old Joshua was when he died? We know Caleb was 85 whenever he took Hebron down there where the mountain, where the giants were, where he took that mountain down to that area. The Bible doesn't tell us the age of everybody that died, but it's interesting that the Bible does tell us how old Joshua was, and I think that's important for us to remember that. He was 110 years of age, and that's one of the facts that's on the memory cards for you. And then the last verse of the book of Joshua tells of an event that happened, and that is when you come to the end of the life of Joshua, they carried something out of Egypt and they were buried by the Jews in Shechem. Well, let's see. Wait a minute. How long had they been in Egypt? Well, they were there 430 years and they came out to the exact selfsame day. A full 430 years they were down in the land of Egypt. Well, you remember who died, you know. Right when shortly after they got down to the land of Egypt, after they got down to the land of Egypt, and that was Joseph. And Joseph told those Jews, someday God's going to come and take you out of the land of Egypt. Take my bones. Now, I'm not sure exactly how long he lived in that 430-year period of time, but for 350 years at least. And then they've been out in the wilderness. And they've been 40 years out in the wilderness. And they spent some number of years conquering the land. Caleb talked about at least 5 years were involved in taking the land. They have some 400-year-old bones. And the last verse of the book of Joshua tells that they buried the bones of Joseph back in the promised land. Abraham was buried in the promised land. Isaac was buried in the promised land. Jacob, even though he died down to the land of Egypt, Joseph carried his body and buried it back in the promised land. And then Joseph died and Joseph said, guys, hang on to my bones. I find that an amazing story, do you not? God is going to keep His promise. And a visual evidence that He was going to keep His promise was the keeping of the bones of Joseph. 350, at least 350 years down there in the land of Egypt. That's an amazing. You go back in American history 350 years ago, and you're shortly after Columbus, I guess. You're before the pilgrims ever arrived. That's an amazing period of time. And yet somebody kept the commandment, remembered the promise of God and pass that promise to the next generation and to the next and to the next. You want a practical application of that? Joseph had to tell his sons and his sons' sons, and those sons' sons, those grandchildren, had to tell their children who told their children who told their children who told their children. I urge you to set a goal in your life of a family tradition of serving God faithfully. Jerry Hopkins is an elder in the church because of a mama and a daddy who 100 years ago, when they got married, decided they were going to serve the Lord. And 100 years later, that influence is still here. And it can happen to you if you just set your heart and your soul in that direction. That's the book of Joshua. Take these cards and let's learn these facts. Not because we're trying to learn facts, but the facts become the basis of faith when you take these stories, the story of Jericho, obedience, the story of Ai, sin, the story of Joseph's bones, the story of faithfulness of Caleb, and all of the things found in the book of Joshua, and apply them to your life and say, I believe that. That really happened, and God will do that same thing for me in my life. We're going to sing a song of invitation right now. If you want to become a child of God, then if you'll believe that Jesus is the Son of God, make up your mind. The Bible uses the word repentance to describe that decision. Make up your mind to follow Him. And this very night, confess your faith in Jesus and be buried with Him in baptism. Then He says to you as a Christian, when you've done these four things, now you just be faithful, and I will give you the crown of life. And I want to tell you something. As surely as you can trust that someday the Lord was going to come and take Joseph's bones out of the land of Egypt and take them back to the promised land, 1,000 times more than that, you can trust the promise of God. You be faithful unto death, and I'll give you the crown of life. If you need to respond to the invitation, come to the front right now as together we stand and sing.